A fucking course. A fucking course.
Your dog's like, that's the most energy you've had all week, Jessie.
I know, right? She's like, what, you want to play? No. No, bitch, I don't. Hey, lovers. Welcome to TSPN. We are post-tortured poets department. This is the first episode after the tortured poets department has entered the world.
Yes, and we are not doing well.
No.
Like, we are not going to sugarcoat shit for you guys. No. Our mental health has spiraled. Like, I was crying before we started recording. So just setting the stage, we hope that us being transparent about how we're feeling maybe helps contextualize if you guys are feeling a similar way. I know that Jessie and I have a little bit more of a task behind these new releases as far as like feeling the anxiety of analyzing and finding the answers and being able to talk about it. But I do know, specifically talking about the torture poets with some of my friends, that everyone's kind of like, oof. So, yeah.
Yeah.
We thought it'd be a good starting place with this episode to first read the post that Taylor posted to her Instagram when the album was dropped. And then I do have the vinyl with me, and I do want to read the summation poem just to kind of set the stage for what Taylor wanted to say about this album ahead of its release.
Yep. All right, lovers, I'm going to start by reading that Instagram post. So Taylor Swift posted this herself. It's not Taylor Nation. The Tortured Poets Department, an anthology of new works that reflect events, opinions, and sentiments, both from a fleeting and fatalistic moment in time. One that is both sensational and sorrowful in equal measure. This period of the author's life is now over, the chapter closed and boarded up. There is nothing to avenge, no scores to settle once wounds have healed. And upon further reflection, a good number of them turned out to be self-inflicted. This writer is of the firm belief that our tears become holy in the form of ink on a page. Once we have spoken our saddest story, we can be free of it. And then all that's left behind is the tortured poetry. The Tortured Poets Department is out now.
Yeah. And I think for me, I take away from that, that she really does want us to know, like, she's moved on. Like, this is something that has been digested and is part of her work of art, but is not lingering. I kind of wish we would have really read that and digested it before we started listening.
Mm-hmm. I think everyone was just so excited to start listening.
Oh my gosh. Taylor, next time, give us like a 2-hour window there to catch it. Okay. Well, I'm going to read next real quick the summation poem, and then we're going to get into what happened for our listening and just kind of our feelings around it. So I'm actually reading this from the vinyl. This is not, I don't believe in its full context on social media. Is it, Jessie? Are you aware of that?
No, not that I'm aware of.
Okay. So it is set, it starts with, in summation, at this hearing, I stand before my fellow members of the Tortured Poets Department with a summary of my findings, a debrief, a detailed rewinding for the purpose of warring and the sake of reminding. As you might all unfortunately recall, I had been stuck with a case of a restricted humanity, which explains my plea today of temporary insanity. You see, the pendulum swings. Oh, the chaos it brings leads the caged beast to do the most curious things. Lovers spend years denying what's ill-fated, resentment rotting away galaxies we created. Ooh, I like that. Mm-hmm. Stars placed and glued meticulously by hand next to the ceiling fan. Tried wishing on comets, tried dimming the shine, tried to orbit his planet, some stars never align. And in one conversation, I tore down the whole sky. Spring sprung forth with dazzling freedom hues, then a crash from the skylight bursting through. Something old, someone hollowed, who told me he could be brand new. And so as I was out of the oven and into the microwave, out of the slammer and into a tidal wave, how gallant to save the Empress from the gilded tower, swinging a sword he could barely lift. but loneliness struck at that fateful hour, low-hanging fruit on his wine-stained lips. He never even scratched the surface of me. None of them did. In summation, it was not a love affair. I screamed while bringing my fist to my coffee-ringed desk. It was a mutual manic phase. It was self-harm. It was house and then cardiac arrest. A smirk creeps onto the poet's face because it's the worst men that I write the best. And so I enter into evidence, my tarnished coat of arms, my muses acquired like bruises, my talismans and charms, the tick, tick, tick of love bombs, my veins of pitch black ink. All's fair in love and poetry. Sincerely, the chairman of the Tortured Poets Department. All right. So Jesse and I spent the Tortured Poets release in South Carolina. We were there for a creator event. I do have a vlog that I made. I'm not very like vlog savvy, but I did it. I did it. I talked it's to the great. Camera several times. What'd you say?
It's great.
Yeah, it does. Yeah, it actually turned out really good in the sense that like, I mean, we had a lot to process that week. Obviously, the release of the album is like its whole beast, but like Taylor was dropping all these clues. You had all the pop-ups. You had all of this stuff happening. We were waiting at 2 o'clock every damn day for like a merch drop or something to happen. And then on top of that, we were with a bunch of other creators and we were at a university and we were working with students. And it just, I mean, it was too much. Like I kind of felt like I was on a reality TV show at one point. I'm like, this feels like a mind fuck. Not reality TV in that like we were being dramatic, but just like we were always like on camera and we were just go, 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 no sleep, be, you know, being having to like show up, you know. And so I say all that to say that the vlog is actually pretty cool now to look back and be like, oh, I really did sit down and talk to my camera at every point that I kind of could. And so I'm stitching that together and it will get on YouTube. Hopefully by the weekend, I'm going to try and get it up kind of with this episode, but keep an eye out for that. If you are kind of an avid listener and you want to kind of know the behind the scenes, because I even interviewed with like, with Ty and with Nikki and just was like, hey guys, how are you feeling? Like we had a lot of just very organic conversations about what it was like to be a creator behind the scenes that week. And we had an Instagram follower who had commented on one of our posts about like taking care of our mental health that week. And I saw it in the airport and I just started crying. And this was before I even left. Like I was like, I just already knew I was about to just enter into a spiral. And I think Jesse and I are kind of still in it. Like I definitely feel a lot better now, but we did not expect what was to become the album. I think we knew the album was going to tear us apart. So it's like very, I don't know, stupid for us to be like, oh, I can't believe we're so depressed. It's just a different form of depression, I think.
Yeah. And I think that everyone joked about it. Like, oh, this album's going to kill us. This album's going to like tear us up. But I don't think we ever really thought about like what could be coming, really. Like, and I think going back to South Carolina, had it been what it was, because we had this planned for a very long time, and Taylor actually announced the Tortured Poets Department release after we had all committed to South Carolina. So that wasn't, it just so happened that when we were there, she was going to have an album release, which was nuts. But then here's, you know, we had 13 creators trying to organize like listening parties and like talking to each other about it and staying up late and listening to the album. And then all of a sudden you get a part two of the album and going live and making content and talking about it and having to process the songs. And I think that's where it became too much. I think that had it originally just been not a release weekend, it would have been easier to manage.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Like the two things separated, I think, would have been fine. And that's where I do want to say, and I put this in the vlog, like we are so privileged to have gotten that opportunity to go. We are privileged to do what we do. And so when we are saying it's too much, it's not coming from a place of we hate our jobs and we're complaining about being content creators. It's just like to give you guys a little bit of under the hood of just kind of how it feels, especially with the Tortured Poets Department being kind of a shock of the album's content was a little bit different than we expected. I think some of the characters who we think are at play are different than we expected. And so you add all that in into the sleepless nights and being away from home and from our animals and our comfort. And I mean, I will be honest, I do have plenty of videos on our TikTok, so definitely go check them out of us like reacting. But most of our reaction videos, we just both look so focused and tired and like kind of a little pissed off, if I'm being honest. Like, you know, there are spurts where we're like really expressive, but there are also spurts where we were just kind of sitting there like miserably. I mean, we weren't miserable. Like, we were obviously enjoying ourselves, but if you were to watch it, you would be like, but we're just focused girls anyway. Like, we're not people who really wear our emotions on our face as much as, you know, we're sitting there kind of clocking all the lyrics and thinking about it, but so many lyrics. It is so dense.
It's very dense. And yeah, when I look back at our reactions, which you guys have to check out, I do look so angry when I'm listening, but I'm not angry at all. Like, I was like so excited and focused and trying to, and I think that was my problem. Okay, so we'll start this right now. I think that was my problem right off the bat that I think a lot of people probably dealt with, was listening to the songs and trying to figure out who it's about.
Mm-hmm.
And you're focused and you're like, wait, what? Who? What? Who did what? You know? And I think that's the tipping point. That's the starting point for the decline in our mental health with this album.
Yep.
If that makes sense.
Yeah. Well, and I think too, it's very easy to go that route, especially as a content creator who we feel the pressure of definitely, you know, providing answers. You know, I've seen videos on TikTok of like going to bed at night knowing that the other Swifties will figure it out for me, you know, and like, we're those Swifties. We definitely want to figure it out. We enjoy this. Okay. Like, we enjoy the research and putting the pieces together. So it's not a burden. It just, like, I do agree. I think I was really focused on the who, and some of the lyrics like would come up and I would be like, oh my God, that reminds me of this song. And then I would like get lost in my thoughts, and then I would come back to it and I'd missed a whole half verse because my brain was almost working too much while we were listening. And I think we were all like that, even Hannah and Ashley. I mean, Ty was vibing. I posted a video on TikTok. He had a White Claw in his hand and he was vibing. I was like, I wish I could go back and vibe a little bit more, but I just feel like the kind of shock that a lot of these songs would be likely about Maddie Healy, which we've got plenty of opinions on that now, of like, maybe there's some layers to this that are beyond what we first intended or first saw. But that was kind of shocking and jarring. And we're like, oh, another song that's not about, you know, something that we expected. And is this about Maddie? And it just, it kind of shifted the mood, if I'm being honest, like fully transparent. I'm sure a lot of people felt that way. And I know I've talked to a lot of people who are creators and not, who kind of feel conflicted about the themes of Maddie, but then it kind of makes sense because he love bombed her. She talked about love bombing in the poem. I actually went back when she was in Australia, like after she had announced Tortured Poets, she was during the Champagne Problem speech talking about the album. And she was like, I don't mean to love bomb the crowd, right? Like, she used love bomb again. And she fucking love bombed us with 31 songs. I almost think the way that she dumped it on us, all of the clues, all of the like songs all at once, is kind of like her way of making us feel that overwhelm.
I think that's the brilliance of Taylor Swift, is that I think her intention was to make this. She used the word chaos I don't know how many times before this album dropped, and she wanted us to feel absolute chaos and how she felt when she was writing the album, because it is chaos. Like, me and Nikki did a video about there being a second album, the two, you know, and I didn't think we'd be right, but we were right. And at the time, it was so exciting to think, oh my gosh, a double album. But then when you get that second set, it's like another love bomb. Like you're saying, like, oh my gosh, like the feelings and the emotions and like the intense reactions. Because before I was, you know, before we started recording, I was telling Anna that I've noticed a difference in myself since this album's come out. I've been like angrier, more emotional. I've been having like lots of feelings. And I think that it's coming from listening to this album. Like, it's really brought up stuff in me that I didn't really know was under the surface. And I think that's the point. That's what she wants.
No, I completely agree. And I think that not only is it like been chaotic with all the things she's released, but I think like even the production of it is anxious. Like, I was actually listening to Clara Bow earlier today, and guys, I would recommend you do this for Clara Bow, but don't be looking for this stuff in other songs, because I started looking for this type of like uncomfortable production and it's kind of ruined a couple songs for me because it's all I hear. But if you turn on Clara Bow, turn it all the way up. If you have earphones on, just beware because it's very loud. But like the first like 2 seconds is this sharp, like sharp noise, and it carries through to pretty much the first verse, but then it goes away. But I'm like, that is so uncomfortable. And I had heard that song 3 or 4 times before recognizing that sound. And I do think there's several spots within the production where it's actually like, they're like juxtaposing some of the sounds or some of the undertones in a way that actually audibly makes you feel uncomfortable, but you're not even aware of it. You know what I mean? And again, I think she wants that. I think that's kind of the genius of it all, is that it will make you as uncomfortable as the lyrics intended to and as she felt it. She wrote it. But it's almost like I've drank too much alcohol and now I'm going through a hangover where I'm like, oh my God, like I almost took way too much. And so I'm actually, you know, I was listening to different music today because I was like, I need a break. So
I almost can't take this whole album in one sitting. Like I can't listen to it start to finish, like 31 songs. I can't do it. I've tried so many times. I've done it. It makes you feel so emotionally exhausted afterwards.
Mm-hmm. Well, there's happy, there's sad, there's, you know, reflective, there's emotional, like it is all the things. It is the, you know, the mental institution vibes that she's giving, right? Like it's supposed to make you feel that way. And one of the things that makes me laugh, so KJ, who we had on the last episode, which if you guys didn't catch that, definitely go back. It's one of my favorites that we've done thus far. And we dropped it obviously on a day where everyone had 31 songs to digest. So it didn't get as many views as we would have expected. So if you haven't caught that episode, it's really, really good. And it's also not like time sensitive. You can listen to it this week and it's just as cool as it was last week. But she had said that she thought the album was like a book of poetry in the sense that it's like a pick your own adventure. Like you don't have to like every poem. Like she keeps calling it pick your own adventure. And I'm like, I kind of love that because I do agree with you where it's like listening through all 31 in order is a lot. It's a lot to digest.
It's very chaotic. And like you said, it's dense. It's like a lot to digest. And when I was talking earlier to you about it, when I use the term, I use the term, it's not sonically cohesive. And what I mean by that is there are country tracks on this. There are folk tracks. There's rock. And I likened it to Red because Red is not, and she's talked about it not being like a cohesive album. And then she went on to make 1989, which is a very sonically cohesive album. And Red, she was experimenting with going into pop, but some of them are very still country. So this one was intended to be like this. It was intended to have the different genres.
Yeah. And we actually talked about that a little bit, I think last night, of like the difference between like maybe sonically cohesive and like genre cohesive. Because like, if I think of sonically as like the highs and the lows and the synth, you know, carrying through, because most of the songs have a very synthy kind of undertone at times. But you're right, like the core of it, like for example, The Smallest Man Who Ever Lived, when that bridge drops, that reminds me of like mid 2000s like alternative rock, like, or like Snow Patrol, The Fray, like, you know, and I'm like, that is not a genre she's touched before. I love it. Oh my God. It literally itches a part of my brain that I needed. But it's like one of those things where it is kind of like she throws little curveballs. And I do agree with you. I think it's intended to be kind of sporadic in those ways to keep you in this anxiety kind of moment. But we have not said this yet and we need to. This album is a masterpiece, and we do believe that. Like, we really love it. Do you believe us? It really is, like, one of the best albums, and some of the songs are already some of my favorites of all time. But
as far as art, yeah, and as far as art goes, it's one of her best. I mean, like, because art is supposed to move you, and it's supposed to make you feel uncomfortable. Yep. And it's supposed to make you feel out of the box. And that's exactly what this does. And it's not what you were expecting. And the next song is not what you were expecting. And the next song is not what you were expecting. And you go on and on with that. And that's art. That's good art.
It is good art. And one thing that, you know, I was talking a little bit with like KJ about this and Hannah, if you don't follow Hannah, Hannah Michelle on TikTok, she does the lover bodysuits and whatnot. But just a little bit about like why we're so obsessed with figuring out who these songs are about. And that's not how I usually am. And I think the reason I'm being like that specifically now is just kind of the surprise that so much is seemingly about Maddie. And so kind of like checking myself of being like, okay, is this actually what I'm trying to get out of this? And to me, I'm kind of just trying to explain away like why there would be so many about that really short relationship. But then the more you think about it, the more you're like, yeah, that's the shit that will fuck you up, is like being in a love bombing situation where you essentially, you know, you don't have all the answers when they leave. You know, whenever you break up with somebody you've been with for 6 years, you probably have kind of swept every corner, right? You've cleaned up, you know kind of how you're feeling and why you're breaking it off, unless that person like literally shocked you and like cheated on you and up and left, right? But I would assume that a lot of the things that we've heard thus far, you know, that kind of tie back to the falling out with Joe are kind of processed for her. And with the situation with Maddie, like he probably left her with a lot of fucking questions and she hadn't been in that situation a long time. And even in the poem, which is why I read it to begin with, she says she writes some of her best music about the worst men, right? And so just really, is that what she said? Let me just quote that correctly. It's because it's the worst men I write best. Like, woof. Like, she's not pretending like that wasn't, you know, a chaotic scenario. But if she needed to write about it and she wasn't going to put this in a vault, you know, I don't think she's doing the vault shit anymore. I mean, she might have a vault track or two, but she's not going to pair songs back. She doesn't need to. She's like at the pinnacle of her career. And she's going to just release what she made.
And I think that, I mean, obviously, since we do this as content creators, and I've done this for a very long time, dissecting her songs, I can tell and I know who a lot of the songs are about. And I'm just not ready to like do videos on it and talk about it quite yet, because I still think we are going to have like the Maddie conversation and we are going to have this and that before we start diving in. But also, Joe has had his moment in the sun with her writing about him. I mean, he's inspired how many songs, how many albums, like he really has. So this one came at a time where I think they had definitely fizzled out. And then she re-met Maddie, rekindled whatever that was. And then I think that this album was born from the chaos of being in the slammer for so long, as she puts it, in the oven to the microwave. Like, it's just very chaotic, but yeah.
Yeah, well, and it's a natural thing. I think I personally know this, you know, and I'm talking to friends, like, there's the rebound, you know, and sometimes that is just part of the breakup of something that was very long-term and meaningful. But I agree with you. I don't want to get too into like who, what's about. I do want to quickly though say there are definitely songs about Joe. So we're not saying this whole album's about Maddie or anything. There's some about Travis. And one thing that we've kind of identified but haven't fully formed but have noticed it in several songs is that there may be multiple muses of many of these songs. And I think that kind of goes back to maybe the mashups. I was talking to JoJo and Casey about this. And then she's like, oh my God, I just made a video. So you can go check out hers, but about how the mashups might be kind of related to this kind of multiple muses, right? It's like multiple storylines are being put into one song, and that multiple kind of themes can then create a new form of art. And so I do think that married with the concept of the braids, she says braids several times on different songs, but then she was wearing braids a lot with her outfits kind of leading into this. And so I kind of thought about braided poetry. That was like one of the themes that I'd kind of guessed might occur. But now I'm starting to question if maybe like within a song, she's braided in the different storylines. On the manuscript, which is the final song, she talks about how the professor gave the assignment of like going back in time, you know? So then I start to question like, are there muses from even before the past couple of years where when she's writing about a certain theme, she's pulling in feelings or people who maybe made her feel a certain way, and each verse might be about a different scenario in her past. And now it's this one like cohesive piece. So I wouldn't write that off. I do think there are probably plenty of songs that have soul muses, but there are probably songs that actually have many.
Yeah. And she could be pulling, yeah, from her past. Like, it's, that's why I think it's going to be nearly impossible to dissect every song on this album. It just is.
Well, and there may be things that we don't know that have happened that will take future albums to come back to. Like this, we were like saying that we thought this would answer a lot of questions. No, she just introduced a lot more fucking questions. So like,
Because I was definitely like, oh, we're going to find out the tea. No, the tea spilled all over the fucking table and down the table and onto the carpet. Like,
and we're like, too much tea. We're not sure how to clean up the tea. Like, the tea doesn't make sense, but yeah.
Yeah.
But at the core of it all is really great music. And I had said this in a TikTok about how I think that a lot of times, especially in Heartbreak, she's written the songs from a reflective place, like a Dear John or Back to December is after a little bit of healing. Like, I wouldn't say it's like fully formed healed, but, you know, kind of talking about it from a place where both of her feet are on the ground. I think a lot of these songs were written when she was just falling on her ass from a heartbreak, you know, and she didn't have both feet on the ground. And she was writing from a place of kind of desperation. And she talked about saying things dramatically or like in a hyperbole. And I think that's where this is different and it feels messier, but I love it, you know. And I, you know, I wish I had music like this when I was going through heartbreaks, because it is hitting at the like root of it versus from a reflective, like aspirational, I'm going to get over him, white horse, right? The rearview mirror, like you're going to see me in fireworks one day over your city. I don't know. That's me trying to quote Dear John. Right. Yeah, exactly. But it's like, you know, it's an aspirational thing. I'm going through this heartbreak and one day I'm going to get better and you're going to fucking find out. Whereas this is hitting right when you're feeling it. So I feel like if you are somebody or if you know somebody who is going through that kind of trauma, this music is going to be what they need. Or maybe it will make it worse. Who knows?
Yeah, it's messy and it's toxic and it's supposed to be that way.
Exactly.
It's supposed to be that way. And that is just what makes her so brilliant. And you're right. Like, okay, like songs like I Can Do It With a Broken Heart, which is such a bop, but at the same time is so sad. And I've seen so many videos of Swifties actually like just getting so emotional over this song that they didn't notice that she was sad or she didn't. But think about how many times have you been really sad and gone your job and done it to the best of your ability?
Exactly. Right?
Put on a mask. Like we put on masks all the time for different people in different situations. And I think that she just is telling us at its core how good of a job she does at her job.
Well, it's empowering when you apply it to your own life, right? Like whenever you're going, and it's not maybe on a broken heart, maybe it's a death, you know, or something that you're going through that's like literally just ripped you apart. And you're like, all right, I'm so depressed. So I act like it's my birthday. Yeah. Like she's like fucking put it on. I can imagine, you know, driving, I don't drive to work anymore, but driving to work and being like, essentially like, I am not feeling like showing up today. I'm going through whatever I'm going through and turning on that song and being like, I mean, she's like, it's a work of art. Like, I'm so productive. Like, it's empowering.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely.
That's... But it's also sad as a fan knowing that we actually have a direct relation to that feeling, right? A lot of times when she writes music, it's from a place that is beyond our control. You know, the emotion she's feeling, the people in her lives, the people who have hurt her, all of that. Whereas, like, this is really, I mean, it's not just about the fans, but, you know, we are an element of that. And one thing that actually Ashley had said, I'll get her handle. Okay, so yeah. So Ashley, who is with us, her handle is Lapin Studios, Lapin Studios. But she, right as it finished, she brought up the point about how in the Eras Tour during the Reputation set, during the song Delicate, as she hits her mark, the stage is shattering, right? She literally hits the like six or eight different marks. And this is the line from I Can Do It With a Broken Heart that relates to. But that life was too short. Breaking down, I hit the floor. All the pieces of me shattered and the crowd chanting more. And so I'm like, holy shit, there's going to be a lot more of that coming out. And that's where Jesse and I like, we're like, do we go through every song for you guys? Like, we don't even have fully formed thoughts, let alone you don't want to hear our half-baked, you know, no, that makes no sense in our minds. So we can't explain it. But over the next several weeks, we'll definitely start to kind of tap into some of these songs as they make more sense to us and kind of give you some stuff. But that's where I think TikTok is actually really great. And if you don't follow Jesse Swift Talk, she's going to be the one who's probably doing more of this. I'm Creative Chronicles on TikTok. And then we've got the TS Pod Network page. That's where we might drop a little bit more like one-off thoughts versus these episodes being more fully formed for you.
But we will definitely get to everything. I mean, eventually.
Yeah.
It's just going to take a while. I mean, I love and I Can Do It with a Broken Heart when she's like, lights, camera, bitch, smile. Like, that is such a bop. Like, you just scream it in your car. That's a scream. Oh my God.
Well, I have to tell you, did I send you this? So Dan, when I was on the plane, he's not going to listen to it in order. Dan's my husband. He wasn't going to listen to it in order. And so I told him, like, as I was taking off, I was like, the next on your playlist should be I Can Do It with a Broken Heart. Cause he loves a good bop, like Cruel Summer, Out of the Woods, all of that. And he goes, oh, I like this one a lot. Lights, camera, bitch, slap is my favorite lyric of all time. I'm a simple man. And I had to be like, baby, it's not bitch slap. It's bitch smile.
I'm a simple man.
Yeah, he's like, I'm a simple man. This song's perfect. Lights, camera, bitch, slap. Oh, man.
Oh, my God. So, that's funny.
And he really liked the name drop of all time, which was the Grand Theft Auto one.
Oh, was that in So High School?
So High School, yeah.
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 So interesting. I do have lots of thoughts about these, but I'm just going to, yeah.
Yeah, one thing too that, and if you guys watch the vlog that I put out about South Carolina, we were talking to Nikki in the car while she was driving. I'm like, hey, while we've trapped you here, let me pull out my camera and ask you some questions. And she had brought up that sometimes whenever you post too early, you're just wrong. Yeah. You just look stupid for being wrong. And so I do think that's where with some of these things, it's like even some of the things that I've even said thus far, I feel differently about. I think LOML is a song where I was like, this has Maddie on it in one of the verses. But now I'm like, again, thinking about this braided kind of lyrics of maybe it's about multiple people. And so it's hard to really kind of stamp that in time and say for sure that I feel that way. But yeah, I would say for me, some of the songs that are on like my draft team and some of the ones that are on yours that I thought would be like heavy hitters aren't. And then some of the ones like I didn't think Down Bad was going to be good.
Right.
Love it. Fucking love it.
Definitely. I mean, that's such a good one. But Daddy, I Love Him is probably one of my favorites. And I don't even know why I guessed that it would be before, but it just because it's nothing like what I thought it was going to be. But that is that's a country tune, guys. I mean, like, that's straight up just like 90s country. And it's so
what you mean by that? It's not sonically 90s country.
Yeah, it sounds like 90s country.
Like, you think the beat sounds like 90s country or the lyrics?
Both. Maybe not the lyrics as much as the beat, but yeah.
You thinking like Garth Brooks and like Reba McEntire 90s?
Martina McBride. Mm-hmm. Independence Day.
Kinda. I could see that. When we talked about Sarah Evans' Suds in the Buckets, yep, which is the 90s one, that to me, this song is written from the Girl Who Ran Away's perspective of being like, you know, the church, the preacher, you know, saying what the hell happened to this girl. I don't remember the song. But I do think, I mean, I don't necessarily think it sounds 90s country, but you know, maybe we listened to different, types of things in the 90s, but I do agree that the lyrics and the kind of storyline being very storied is kind of country-ish. You know what I mean? She talked about that within the last Great American Dynasty where, you know, there's characters and there's feelings, but Daddy, I Love Him was one that was very conflicting for me in the beginning because I think the very first verse is about the fans. And maybe not every fan or every Swiftie, but just essentially, you know, they raised me up to put me in this cage. And you find out that people hate you. But then the more you listen to it, you're like, is this, you know, is this the people that are critical of her because she's not a good role model? You know, are these the people who turned on her as soon as she started dating Maddie? Is this about, you know, people who never actually liked her and want to go after her regardless? Like, it's not so clear. And so I think that's where it took me a while to like not feel personal about that. Because as a content creator who speaks out, you know, she says soliloquies I'll never hear. Like, is that us? Like, you know, that's honestly kind of where I was at initially. And now I start to think about it and I'm like, no, it's definitely not. Like, she doesn't want people not talking about her shit. Like, she definitely does. It's just more the hate and the judgment behind it and coming at it from a place where you are trying to tear her down or cage her into a version of Taylor that she should be. I do know that there are probably several examples where people really are like, you know, getting mad that she's not living up to the version of what they expected her to be. And maybe that's where she's headed with that. But then when she talks about the elders and going down to the courthouse, like there's definitely elements of her team and her own like PR. So that feels like one of those examples where I like listen to each verse and I'm like, okay, this is very layered. It's not just pointed to one, you know, muse or one audience. It's like, here's all the different ways in which I feel like I'm being caged in.
Well, and she knows that people film the reactions to her songs. So the part where she's like, I'm having his baby, and she pauses, no, I'm not, but you should see your faces, is definitely for that instant reaction that you're going to get. When we did it, I did it. I was like, what?
No, you weren't. That was the one I posted. You were focused. My soul left my body. You guys should go to the TikTok. Literally, I lost a part of my soul. That and Jesse's like, can we start over?
Yeah, that was the one I made you repeat because I was already in my head too much about the last one still, and I missed it.
Yeah, but you totally missed it. I think you knew you missed it because Hannah and I were like, what the fuck? But she started liking those because to me, like, I felt like, I don't know, it kind of felt like, does she not want us doing this stuff? But I do think that with like that line, that doesn't just apply. Like, it does apply to the fans and the listening videos, but like, she's talking about like the elders, she'd be talking about her dad. Like, yeah, like you should see your faces when she would tell her dad if she was pregnant. Like, she just knows that if she were, I mean, think about if she got pregnant during a tour. Could she continue, right? So she's saying, like, I can't just live my life. I can't just fall in love and get pregnant and not have consequences or not have people who are going to be disappointed or things that are going to not fit the mold. And that's where I think that line, yes, it is about the reaction. But I also think, again, as you carry through the verses, very 90s country-esque, where like the same thing means different things in different context, kind of like All Too Well. Like All Too Well kind of does that where, you know, the meaning of it kind of changes. And I feel as though that line about the baby and having a baby and no, you should see your faces is actually very indicative of she doesn't have control over her life.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Which she talked about a little bit in Miss Americana, about how everything's planned 2 years in advance.
Yeah, exactly. And this song for me, because we're going to talk about too, you know, how it's like affected us. This one has probably affected me the most. And it's the lines of, I'll tell you something right now. I'd rather burn my whole life down than listen to one more second of all this bitching and moaning. And she says, I'll tell you something about my good name. It's mine alone to disgrace, which I love. I love that for me, for her, for every woman. Like, it's not up to you or anybody else to tell you how to tell people how to think about me. It's up to me. If I want to disgrace my name, I'll do it.
Mm-hmm.
Right? I don't cater to all those vipers dressed in empath's clothing. God save the most judgmental creeps who say they want what's best for me. And then she goes on, and I love this part later on in the song. If all you want is gray for me, then it's just white noise and it's my choice. The my choice just sticks out to me so much, especially just right now. But yeah, I just feel like that song has really just like hit me in the core.
Yeah. Yeah. At first, when I thought it was directed at fans, it was a tumultuous feeling. I remember being in the airport on my layover from South Carolina because it's one that I couldn't stop listening to because it's so good. But mm-hmm. I was like trying, I'm like, again, I'm trying to figure out what's this about? Who's this about? To almost like break down my feelings of, is this about me? You know, and again, not mm-hmm. me like Anna, but like Swifties who make content on the internet. And I'm like, it's not like I've come to that conclusion, but I do know there's been a lot of discourse. I've seen people talk about it of like, you know, this is her kind of clapping back at fans. And I'm like, ah, what's funny is when we were at the theater in South Carolina, we went and saw the Eras Tour movie, and on the marquee above us, there was the like now showing Civil War. And we were joking like, well, if it said Revolutionary War, it would be a good theme for Taylor, because we joke about the first shots being fired on April 19th, whatever. But after I listened to this song, I started kind of reflecting back, and I'm like, this is kind of going to start a little bit of a civil war amongst the fans, because there are fans who hear that song and are going to think, Stop giving soliloquies she'll never see. She doesn't want you talking about this. And then there are fans who maybe see it differently. And so it's just like, it just made me feel, if I'm being completely transparent with you guys, which I will be, it made me really uncomfortable and really worried. And I'm through that now, but it really freaked me out. I'm like, I have a fucking podcast talking about Taylor and she's saying soliloquies, you know, but I'm like, we're not trying to put her in a cage. We're not trying to like judge her or make other people feel differently about her. So I really hope that we're still, you know, meeting the mold of, you know, what it's like to really project her art and to create more art on top of it, not necessarily confining her into expectations.
Right. And I mean, as a content creator and being one for a very long time on Taylor Swift, I feel like I know exactly who she's talking about.
Yeah.
And that might be controversial, but I don't care. It's my name, mine alone to disgrace.
I mean, people, it's not just content creators. It's the people in her comments. You know, you go to her Instagram. I'm sure during the Maddie Healy situation, her Instagram comments were flooded. Well, not just her. I don't think she has comments turned on, does she? I know Taylor Nation does. But if you go to Taylor Nation's comments, and people expect her to be political, and they expect her to be a savior, and they expect her to be a role model. And I mean, this has really pissed off a lot of very Christian groups. I think that Christianity is definitely layered just like anything. And so I don't say that it's all Christians by any means, right. By any means. And I do think that a lot of the messages of you don't have to pray for me and I'm going to make my own choices and stuff, those people are hating on her in her comments. So it's not just a direct, it's not like a direct thing to the people who are creating content and doing the soliloquies. I think it's also like for anybody who is going to be outright upset and let down, she's like, you put me in this, you raised me up just to hate me or just to cage me.
Definitely. And I am so sick and tired of people saying that Taylor should be this perfect little role model for young girls. Like, first of all, that's not really her audience anymore. Okay. Second, she's grown up, and what's wrong with cussing? Like, what does that make me less of a woman? Does that make me less of a lady? Like, you know what I mean? It's so infuriating. And that's why I think I like it so much too.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think that the themes of it, I can speak from experience. I, you know, I've got cousins and a niece and everybody who are 13, 14 years old, and they don't really like Evermore and Folklore, right? Those are albums that they're like, eh, yeah. And I'm like, well, good, because that means they haven't felt the fucking feelings, right? Tolerate it doesn't hit them. And that's a good thing, right? And that's where I do think Taylor's not for young kids anymore. She probably has good bops that, you know, younger people will enjoy. But some of these songs, like, you almost have to have gone through a lot of life and experienced a lot of fucked up situations to really mm-hmm. have the lyrics hit you right. And if they don't, I am genuinely happy for you. Like, whether it's because you're younger or because you haven't had to deal with toxic men or toxic, you know, abusive situations or feeling caged or feeling like you have to speak out against somebody. So like that is one of those things where I'm like, she can't be for young people if the themes she's writing about don't even hit with young people.
Well, and personally, like, I have sons. I don't have a daughter. But mm-hmm. if I did, she's the perfect role model. for me. I mean, what is a role model really like? What is it? Someone that doesn't cuss? Someone that wears modest clothing? Like, what? I don't understand what people want from her. And I think that's where she's at too. What the hell do you want from me?
Yeah, I'm going to start crying because I think about when my niece was over and we watched Miss Americana. Fuck. And I think about like how Taylor's sitting there talking about her eating disorder and how she's like, I wasn't healthy. I was too skinny. Like I was going on stage every night and I thought it was normal to feel this way and all of this stuff. And I'm like, if I was 13, when I was 13, the fucking, you know, 17 magazine, and that was kind of where you got your media. I mean, it was all fucking cocaine skinny bitches from the 90s, right? Mm-hmm. Like if you did not look like the girls on Blue Crush, where your stomach was so fucking skinny and you were perfectly tan, and but it wasn't skinny skinny. It was like you had to like have like a little bit of a six pack and stuff like that. Like that's what I grew up like thinking I had to look like. And so if there were people who were celebrated and who had a microphone who were saying, you know, this was not healthy for me and I don't do that to myself anymore and I still think about it, but it's not what I'm going to do. I feel like that's the role model. You know what I mean? That's not, it's one thing to present well, but if you present well and you don't actually show vulnerability, then all you're showing people is an aspiration of perfection that they are not going to achieve and they are going to beat themselves up inside for not achieving. So I think Taylor's vulnerability and her ability to speak from her heart about the problems, and a lot of times people are like, oh, she's playing the victim. And this is an album where she kind of is the victim, but we are victims in our own stories, right? Like everything that you go through, you see from your own mindset. And so to have lyrics and song and art that is coming from the place of your perspective in a way that like maybe in the broader sense isn't, you know, the whole truth. That's okay because it's how you use music to cope. And so, yeah. All right. That's my monologue. That's my soliloquy.
This is what we mean about how this album's affected us. Like it's really taken me to like take a step outside of like role models and women and what that's supposed to look like and what it's rough out there, guys.
Yes.
And it's a lot of trauma when you get to be a certain age. It doesn't matter. Like I had been through a lot of trauma by the time I was 15. Like it's just like she's talking about trauma. There's no like mold for you of the perfect woman. Like everyone comes with baggage. Everyone comes with trauma. That's what shapes us.
Exactly. Exactly. And I think that's where it's like trying to listen to this music and not think about who it's about. Maybe another way that I'm like avoiding feeling the actual feelings of how this song would make me feel. You know what I mean? Because we've all gone through scenarios where certain songs, you know, pick your own adventure, to quote KJ again, you know, certain songs may be reflective of things that you've gone through that are not processed, right? I mean, I'm in therapy, let's be real. Like there are things that I've gone through that I am not ready to process. And so I think that that's where this music, we always joke that Taylor's our therapist, but like this music's like a little too close to like her own version of what she went through. And so if you're really going to lean into it, you might start to open up thoughts or emotions, because sometimes it's not fully formed thoughts, but like Jesse said earlier, like you've been angrier or like more reactive. And it's just kind of bringing us to a place where we're like overwhelmed.
Very overwhelmed, very exhausted. Like, yeah, if you've noticed any of that, I have too. And I think it's definitely just stemmed from this album. And I had said on an earlier episode that I would love to see Taylor go more dark and more morbid. She did. So
this album was a be careful what you wish for album. She's like, you want a double? Fucking here you go. Good luck.
You want morbid? Here you go. You want dark? All right. Postmortem. Like, right. Okay, so let's talk about Fortnite. Let's talk about the music video. Let's talk about the duet. Let's talk about Fortnite.
Yeah. So I was on a plane when the music video dropped. So when I landed, I had several texts, including one from you. And you were like, this is the best music video. Like, well, how about you start since you watched it first?
I was sitting in the airport because my plane had got delayed several times. And I watched it in the the airport, and I actually made a TikTok video about it directly after in the airport, but it is the best piece of art I have ever seen come out of her, ever. It's the best music video. I mean, visually, it is stunning, stunning. And the themes in it that she has are just, they cut you to the core. Like, she starts in a mental hospital. The scene with her, like, with the pill on her tongue, the scene with her with post tattoos all over her face. I mean, visually shocking, stunning, just, it's chef's kiss.
It's jarring more than shocking. Yeah. It's kind of uncomfortable, but, like, in the most beautifully executed way. Yeah, the tongue thing, that's from Blank Space. Did you know that? Mm-hmm. Like, when she sticks her tongue out and then they place the pill on it. And there's a scene in the Blank Space music video where she does that with a candy heart. There's probably way more, right? This is where there's too much. There's too much going on. Yep. To even start, like, if she had just released one music video, we could all dice, oh, what are the similarities to other work, whatever. But she released 31 songs. She dropped all of that shit all over the US right ahead, like all those like pop-ups. She dropped a music video. It's hard for us to say, yeah, this music video means X, Y, Z. It's just the math. There's too many numbers in the equation right now for us to do math problems.
Yeah. And Post Malone was the perfect duet on that song. I was unsure about what that would be like. Very really? Unsure because I don't really listen to Post. I mean, I will now, but like I never listened to Post Malone before, really. Like,
oh, I love Post Malone. I didn't know this until obviously he was he duetted with Beyonce and then now Taylor. So he's obviously like the winner of the year. But he has the most, I don't know if it's like diamond records. There's like a term. It's like whenever you've reached a certain milestone, but he has more diamond selling records than anybody. And I think like next up is like Bruno Mars. Yeah. So looking it up. So he has 8 diamond certified records, which is the most. And what does diamond certified mean? So a diamond certified song is a song that has moved at least 10 million equivalent units by combining sales and streaming numbers. So he's had 8 that have gotten there. So again, very successful, but to your point, not a lot of people, everyone's heard of him probably because of that, right? He's had so many hits. But yeah, I really like his stuff. It's a good vibe. And so when I saw him on the track list, like I screamed, I was like, what? So I'm glad that it lived up to expectation. And I love that, honestly, I'm going to be really funny, or not I'm going to be really like petty here, but I kind of like that as a man, he didn't get his own verse, but Florence did, because that kind of turns on her head. She's gotten a lot of criticism over that over the years of whenever she would duet with a man, he would get a verse, but whenever she would duet, like Kobe Calle, for example, didn't get her own verse, but then, Ed Sheeran did on Red and Fearless.
And Lana, the whole Lana thing.
Yeah, the more, oh my God, can we get a more Post version?
People are saying that like on the internet. I love how she took Josh Charles and Ethan Hawke from Dead Poets Society from 1989, the movie, and placed them in this music video as of like, what would they be doing now? Like, oh my gosh, brilliant, brilliant.
Yeah, I have no facial recognition. And luckily, so I got home from the airport and then I was like, let's pull up YouTube on the big old TV and watch it together. And again, my husband thought the song for I Can Do It With a Broken Heart, he thought it said bitch slap. So his like cultural references are minimal, but he can recognize a fucking face. So whenever that came up, he was like, oh my God, those are big actors. And it wouldn't have even registered to me that those were not just some random cast that she picked. So and the fact that they are from Dead Poets Society. You guys watched it the other night, you and Eric, did you?
We watched it the other night because I thought it would help give a little context to the album, and it was fantastic. I mean, what a good movie. And it did give me some context to some of the other songs, but what a tragedy too.
What was the tragedy?
Have you ever seen it?
No,
I'd never seen it either. So, and I love Robin Williams in a serious role.
I love it. I feel like I saw it in high school, like in a class. You know, they used to roll in the TV because we went to high school before modern technology and you'd watch it.
Mm-hmm.
I think we had projectors, so.
Yeah, I don't even know how nowadays they'd even be able to show this in a high school or under like classroom, because it's about.
So before Jesse gets into the plot of this, I just want to say we are going to have some spoilers. So click that, skip ahead 15, 30, a couple minutes here, just because she is going to spoil a little bit of the movie. But if you, I mean, the movie's got some tragedy in it, so you might want to know about some of this stuff before you watch it. So she's going to delicately kind of touch about the tragedy that happens in it. So just want to throw that in there in case you are planning on watching it on your own.
So it's about this school, like in the 1950s, that is an all boys school. And, you know, back when the teacher, have you seen The Holdovers? It's like a brand new movie that was up for Oscars. It's got Paul Giamatti in it.
No.
Really good movie. But it reminded me of The Holdovers. But it was this in the 1950s, and it was this school for boys. And like, it was back when the male teachers would like live there too. Like, they'd have their own housing dorms and stuff. And it was a religious, I think it was a Catholic maybe, like, school. And their English teacher had retired, and it was a new year, and they had a new English teacher, which was Robin Williams. And he just had unorthodox, you know, different ways of teaching. And like ripping pages out of books, and like he really promoted like being a free thinker. And throughout the film, you see some of the boys like just kind of come into their own because of him and because of this class. And one of the boys, he is very much, like very much inspired by Robin Williams's character, and his name is Professor Keating, Keating, I don't know, something like that. Which I feel like is a play on the poet Keats, but I don't know. But yeah, so this one character he's very inspired by him, and he ends up, his dad, he's an only child, and his dad is very like militant and wants him to just go to school and become a doctor. And he kind of like bucks against that a little bit, and he really wants to be an actor. So he's in like a town play, and his dad finds out and ends up going to opening night. And you see this commotion at the end of the play, and Robin Williams is there, and he's supporting this kid, and his dad's not. And his dad's like, stay away from my son. They get back to the house, and he says, I'm enrolling you in military school. Like, you're not going back to that school. And then that night, he unalives himself, the character, which is so sad. And it took me aback at first, like, oh my gosh, that's like one of the main characters, and like this happens. How, like, what? Like, that makes me take a step back from this movie. But then I think, what's poetry without a tragedy? And that was the tragedy of it all.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, I think that's an interesting thing about the dad not wanting the kid to do what he wanted to. I think that does play into some of the themes here, like the daddy, I love him. And again, not a one-to-one, but I bet, I mean, Taylor had to have watched it, right? She had the actors from the movie in the music video. Like, it's a piece of the puzzle here.
Yeah. And she says in one of the songs, dutiful daughter, I think it's, but daddy, I love him. I'm not sure, but she says dutiful daughter. I want to be a dutiful daughter, something like that. And that's taken straight from the movie. He says, the dutiful son.
Yep.
So.
Yep. Yeah. So your depression is compounded by the fact that you're watching depressing movies. So just diving right in. Let's talk about something exciting though. We had the merch drop. That happened on, what, Friday, right before the album came out?
Yes. Yes. Right before.
What did you get? I know we were together, and I know what you got, but let's talk about what you got. That's exciting.
So I'm an earrings girl, so I got the TTPD earrings, and then I love the Black Dog, the song. I loved it before it came out. I love the title, so I got the crew, the black crew neck with the Black Dog visual on it.
What'd you get? I did the necklace because my earrings, like I have really sensitive ears, or else I would, right? But I know that that shit's going to ruin my ears. So I got the necklace, which I really like. I like a delicate one. So that's cute. And then I got the album holder, which I hadn't done before. I've never actually bought all the variants, right? Like I didn't buy all the variants of Midnights or anything like that, but I definitely did for Tortured Poets, probably because we have a podcast and I just was like, I have to have them all. It's like Pokemon. You got to collect them all. So then I got the book, which is like the holder. It's not wall art. It's like, and I think that'll look really cute behind me in the podcast. So I'm going to probably, you know, include it once it arrives. But all of this stuff, I have seen a couple people, I think, start getting their merch. It's coming quickly. And obviously, there's been something that happened. All of the vinyls came from Taylor Swift official store, I believe is what it's called. So they weren't coming directly from UMG. They were shipped from Tennessee, which I think is different. No confetti, unfortunately. Maybe this isn't a confetti era. But I also think with what UMG did during the Christmas holiday, where a lot of shit didn't make it in time and they had to refund a bunch of stuff. And if you recall, during the 1989 Taylor's version drop, a lot of people's albums just got stuck somewhere. So I almost wonder, I don't know if she's moving away from UMG entirely or just their distribution, but it does seem like that big blunder has probably made them shift who they're shipping from and maybe take operations in-house.
Yeah, it does, because it came quick. And I will say, I want to shout out Anna because she got me a signed vinyl. Oh my gosh, thank you. It was such a surprise. And I'm so glad you did, because when I got it, I got to show you guys this. So I got a closed heart under her name, which is like so fucking rare. And I am actually getting that heart as a tattoo somewhere. So leave it in the comments where on my body I should get that, because I don't know where yet, but I'm going to get it.
Left butt cheek. Not on your face. Well, I don't know. With Post Malone and the music video, maybe that will be the next big thing. The vinyls came out, signed vinyls. I've never gotten anything signed by Taylor Swift, right? So I was like on it, and then I was texting you, and you were radio silent. And I think you had said like one of your kids was getting a haircut or something. So I knew you were busy, and I was like, fuck, like you got to get one. So I grabbed my husband's credit card because it needs to be different. It's like unique buyers. And I figured if I'm shipping it to you and I'm buying with a different credit card and I used your TSP and email, like to Taylor Nation, that, I mean, it is a different person. It's not like I sent them both to me. But then Dan came down and I like had his wallet out. He was like, what are you doing? I was like, don't worry about it. I'm like, you've literally been upstairs all fucking morning and you walk down when I'm literally using your credit card. Like, no.
Thank you, Dan.
Yeah, thank you, Dan. I'm like, what's mine is yours? I always say, what's mine is yours, baby cakes. Like, we share a bank account, so whatever.
I got, during the Midnight's era, I did get a signed vinyl behind me. I actually, that's from Monica Endgame on TikTok. So I don't know what it is about people gifting me with signed vinyls. It's amazing.
Yeah, Monica's the hero. She texted yesterday or 2 days ago and was like, cardigans run. And I was like, bye.
Oh my gosh, I know. I did get a cardigan. Obviously, that was the thing I wanted the most out of this. But yeah, I did get, during the Midnight's era, I did buy a signed Jade album, like CD. So that's cool. But I've never gotten the heart. I screamed. I should have recorded myself opening this thing because my reaction was insane. Like, I ran away. Eric's like, what are you doing? And I'm like, Eric, look at that. Look at that. And he's like, what? And I'm like, you don't get it. You don't get it. It's a heart. You don't get it. We get it. Swifties get it.
Yeah, well, the highs have been high and the lows have been low this week, haven't they?
They have been. Oh my gosh. And I feel like I'm overreacting about everything.
Yeah.
That's
part of
this. Yeah,
we're just dramatic. Like,
I'm dramatic anyway.
Mm-hmm.
Let alone add this on top of it and like have me feeling feelings I didn't know I had. And oh my gosh. But yeah, it was awesome. But
love that.
Yeah, I'm getting that tattoo.
Yeah. Okay. Well, Jesse, I know we aren't going to analyze every single song, but let's kind of talk about some favorites. So do you have any that, you know, really kind of stand out or you're kind of figuring out thus far?
Well, other than the ones I mentioned, I did want to put up there Peter as one of my favorites. And that is kind of a take on Peter Pan and, you know, how she and who, I don't know who she's talking about in it yet. And I think that's why I love it so much, because it's about someone that isn't growing up, you know, and isn't taking on the responsibilities. But that one's just so beautifully written, like composed, everything. And then I did want to talk about So Long London really quick, because that one is the one that caught me off guard right away with the beautiful church choir sounding at the beginning.
Yes. Actually, I'm glad you brought that up. What I'm going to do, guys, I'm going to host the So Long London video, the full video of it. I cannot put it on YouTube because YouTube will take it down. We don't have the publishing rights and all of that. I will host it. You guys will have to be a user on our website. So we do have user functionality now where you can create like a username and password. And we're going to have all this like special content that we're releasing with that. It's free, all of that. It just, what it does, it allows us to gate it. And then you can like, eventually we'll have comment sections. And we're really excited about where our website is headed. And so what I'll do is I will host the full So Long London reaction video just on the site, right? So it's not streaming through any third party. It's just us hosting it. But definitely, if you want to watch the full video, just go to the website, create a user, and then I'll just have it linked pretty clearly, because it is like you wrote the word church on the piece of paper. And like, I don't know. It's just, it was one of those things where when I watched it through, I was like, people need to see this start to finish, because you could just watch. Like, this was one where we were very expressive. And at the very end, when you say that might be the saddest fucking song I've ever heard.
Mm-hmm.
We posted that portion to TikTok, and I laugh every time I see it just because you're so dramatic.
I am. It's so good, though. Oh my gosh, the church, and she talks about like basically the altar and being, you know, like, promise you're going to marry me, but oh, it's just, it's.
And she's pissed off she gave him all that youth. Like,
yes.
Like, I literally gasped.
Yes, yes, absolutely. And the only other one I wanted to bring up was Are You Afraid of Little Old Me? That is probably one of my favorites on this album. I don't know if it's the melody or the composition or the lyrics. It might be all three, but it is just stunning. I absolutely love that one. Like,
It's also a beautiful representation of female anger.
Yes. I was going to say that. Yes. Yes. Mm-hmm. It is. Female rage.
Like, it was the first one I played for my mom. I was like, Mom, listen to this, Mom, because she's very similar to me, where we're like, if you wanted me dead, you should have just said, bitch. You know, like, right? Let's go.
Right. Yeah. Like, you should be. You should be afraid. Like, yeah. I love
it's
that.
So beautiful. The composition's beautiful. Like, Who's Afraid of Little Old Me might be one of her best songs ever. Like, mm-hmm. I will say that right now. And I think it's the composition, it's the theme of it, it's the representation of anger, and you really, as a woman, being able to say, like, you should be afraid. Like, let's fucking go. Mm-hmm. I say that like, and I'm like, I don't want to fight. But in times that, you know, there may be times in your life where you're dealing with something at work, or with a falling out of a friendship or a relationship, or somebody has fucked you over. And like, those are the songs that I feel like I can't get enough of. And again, like, we're feeling the emotions right now. I have no vendettas against anyone right now, but when I listen to that song, I'm like, let's, like, who am I going to beat up today? And I think that's a little bit fucked up in my head. You know what I mean? Like,
well, and I love how she talks about the circus of it all, because touring and entertainment is such a circus, but they took out her teeth. Like, they made her into this role model and this good girl that she had to be. And I just, everything about it just like screams.
Well, yeah. Oh, go on.
No, yeah, that's what I was going to say.
Sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt you. Yeah, the idea of the perfect role model is played out in Clara Bow as well. She talks about, like, you know, it's a nightmare or whatever she said. It's like pure hell being dazzling, essentially. We can't even quote the lyrics of the songs we've known for 12, 15, 17 years. So you are not going to get a solid quote out of me, but that's what I think Clara Bow says. It's something about being like miserable, that you have, like, being dazzling's not all it's meant out to be. And I think this past year has really brought to light that in the entertainment industry, specifically with like Britney Spears coming out with her memoir. And there's just been a lot of like spotlight, even with the stuff with Diddy lately. Like, there's a little bit more, I think, empathy and spotlight on what it's like to be an artist in the entertainment industry. So I do love that Taylor is using her voice to kind of say, yeah, I go through this too. And, you know, it is hell. And I think if this album would have come out with those lyrics 5-7 years ago, people would have pissed all over her and been like, you are so privileged. What are you to complain about? But I mean, the Nickelodeon documentary, like it's just so clear that this industry is not healthy and that the people who are in it, as much as they gained so much from it, they also, a lot of them is taken.
Yeah. And if there's going to be someone that's going to expose it as a whole, it's going to be Taylor.
Yeah, exactly.
And come out on top, try to come for my job.
Oh, I love it. I know.
You know,
come for me, bitch.
Brilliant. Are there any that stick out to you that we didn't mention yet?
Yeah, I surprisingly am in love with The Alchemy. And I don't know why it surprises me. It reminds me when I first heard Midnight Rain, I remember like I couldn't help but just move. I'm like, ooh, this song makes me want to dance. You know, like it's just smooth and, but it's not. It's not like overtly sexual of a song, The Alchemy, but it feels like a little bit more of a grown-up version of like a Dress. Like it's kind of a sexy song in the beat of it, and it just has really good rhythm and it's positive. And I feel like it's the grown-up version of Dress in the sense that it is like love and commitment and, you know, the chemistry of the white wine and stuff like that without the anxiety. Like mm-hmm. I truly feel like this is one of the first love songs that she's written that doesn't have undertones of worry.
Mm-hmm. I agree. Yeah, it's fabulous.
Yeah, like I could jam it to it all day. And then the bridge of The Smallest Man Who Ever Lived is like, it just scratches an itch. I am trying to figure out, and maybe by the time this comes out, I will have figured it out, but I've gone through every song that I ever listened to in high school that had, like, again, The Fray, Snow Patrol, I don't know, All American Rejects, Switchfoot. Like, there is something about that change and the piano part of it that I've heard before. I can't figure out what it is. And maybe it's just that she has created that kind of genre in the most perfect way that it feels like I've heard it, but it is hers and hers only. But I question if she sampled stuff. Like there are several points where I'm like, I feel like I've heard this. And I think a lot of people point out she might be sampling her own work to like draw parallels to things.
Definitely. I mean, she's brilliant with all that too, with, you know, the beats. And there's so many things that I think we don't even know about with the beats of the music. I'm not like a musician and I'm not one to study music or even understand how to read it. But can you imagine the Easter eggs she probably puts in that?
Can you believe that we have a top 50 music commentary podcast?
That's crazy.
I know. We're like, what? The beats. The beats. what about the beats? I was like, what does sonically cohesive mean? I said that the other night. And I'm like, how do we have a musical commentary or a music commentary podcast and are trying to figure out the difference between like genre cohesive and sonically cohesive? But that's just how Apple Music categorizes us. It's not like we said that's our category. It's just who they've defined us as. But I will say we are recording this on Wednesday, April 24th. I forgot to say that in the beginning, but if something has happened between now and Friday that we haven't touched on, just that, you know, good old disclaimer that we do need a day to edit. So everything that we've said here is pre any surprises that may come.
Okay. Well, do you want to finish this episode off with if she adds Tortured Poets to the Eras Tour?
What are the three songs?
Yeah, let's do three. What are the three songs you think are concert worthy?
Yeah. So I, first off, think The Alchemy, obviously. I think it's a bop and it's positive. I don't know how she would do something like I Could Do It With a Broken Heart. I mean, what's she going to sing to a crowd of 70,000 people? I mean, is that on your list?
Mm-hmm. That's my number one.
She's like, fuck you guys.
Well, I just think it's such a concert bop. Like, and oh, the dance moves she could do to that with like, I'm sparkling. I don't know. I just
No, do you know the guilt you would feel cheering to that though?
God, I know, but I love it.
No, it's definitely the most stadium worthy. I thought, what is it? The Who's Afraid of Little Me? If she does include this in the Eras Tour, I feel like that is, it's kind of like when she did the mad version of Illicit Affairs. Like, can you imagine? It almost kind of makes me question, like, if she did this era, would she do the boppier stuff or would she make it dark? I think that really changes up what songs we choose. But yeah, that one. And then I also think Down Bad. Like, again, I kind of chose more of the ones that are good vibes, but I mean, all of them. This could be its own tour. Bad.
Yeah, I had Down Bad too. Obviously, But Daddy, I love him. Like, that one's such a bop. But I could see Thank You, Amy being on tour. Like, yeah. Imagine the whole crowd screaming, fuck you, Amy. Like, I just can see it. I don't know. It's just so, such a good song. And then I also thought about, like, So High School.
Oh, yeah, duh. That's a great one. That's a great one.
Yeah. It definitely brings you back to Speak Now vibes. For me, it did anyway. And I think that's what she wanted. She wants it to sound like that.
Well, for me, I think the intention of it almost, my friend's husband actually said it reminded him of like Dawson's Creek or something. You know, it's kind of like when Taylor and Travis were in high school, the rom-coms of television and movies, like this is a song that would fit perfectly on those. And I think that's the point. Oh my God. One thing I forgot to say, The Alchemy is track 15. So The Alchemy is about probably Travis. I mean, it's fucking hilarious. She says the words touchdown. I mean, like if you were to put on a bingo card, things that Taylor would not do, I would not think she would put touchdown. I just think like it would have been too literal. And when I heard touchdown, I was like, this bitch is fucking hilarious because she's like the greatest songwriter of all time. And she's like, I'm going to be so literal so that there's like clarity. Anyway, she talks about the trophy and all that, but it's track 15, which if we know 15, the song, which is from the Fearless era, is about you're going to do greater things than dating the boy on the football team.
I didn't make that connection. Oh my gosh. I love that.
Yeah. Yeah. I hadn't told you that yet because I was like, maybe you haven't figured this out. But yeah, I think there's something to that being track 15 because it's like, yeah, you know, there are greater things that you'll do, but maybe you will date the boy on the football team.
Yeah, that's awesome. Yeah, so those would be good for a tour. The only other one I think that we haven't talked about yet is Florida. Holy shit. Oh my God, that beat in it when she hits you with that, the drums and the tambourine.
Yeah,
together.
You brought up the tambourine because didn't you say during the rep era, she like taps her hip in the Eras Tour. She like taps her hip and you're like, it's like she's tapping a tambourine. And then as soon as that song came on, you're like, the tambourine.
Well, and she had the tambourine and the pop up.
Oh, she did? Okay.
Yeah.
See, I missed a lot of that. We were so fucking busy with South Carolina, but yeah.
And like Florence Welch just kills it on this track. And it is such a good song. I have no fucking clue what it's about, but I love it.
Yeah. And if you're watching on YouTube and you saw my face when she brought up Florida, that's because I have no fucking clue what the song's about. And it drives me nuts.
No, I'm just like, yeah.
But it's good. Like it's really good. And I've got some thoughts. We've kind of started to lay some notes out, but it is one that I thought, okay, I don't know what I think it's on my TTPD team. And I remember thinking, we have no clue what's going to come from this. So I was excited to hear it. And then after hearing it, I was like, I still don't know what this is about.
Well, Taylor says, and I just sent this to you, but on one of her voice memos on Channel 13, when they were playing the new album, when she talks about some of the songs, she talks about Florida. And she talks about how if you do something bad or you commit a crime, she said she thinks that like those people move to Florida and just kind of like blend in. And that's, you know, that's what she kind of talks about with that one. So
weird.
And what it reminded me of right away when I first heard it was Nobody, No Crime, was Esty, the cheating husband, the missing husband, the, you know, how they talk about it. It just kind of reminded me of like a part two. Like So Long London is like a part two to You're Losing Me. The CPR, the face gray, like, yeah.
Yeah, I'll have to listen to it like that. And guys, there are theories out there. We're not going to get too into theory land about, you know, does Florida equal because she went to the Florida shows after the breakup, like all that. Like the reason I say that is because it's all over TikTok. And Jesse and I will make our own TikTok videos and stuff. But I think it's just really hard for us to be like, that's it. So I don't want to mislead you if this is the only episode you hear in a month. You know, this is really kind of our preliminary thoughts. And we will kind of get more into it. And we still do have Swiftie 101 on the docket. This has totally turned our heads on us like a fucking spiral. So we know that that is something that is very important to start doing. And so we will be hammering in and starting that very soon. And guys, the TTPD draft as well is up and you can vote. I'm just gonna leave it up probably till the end of the year. We'll do more kind of voting stuff. So I'll have like a spot on our website where you could like click into the various kind of competitions that we do. But Jesse and I had drafted teams before the album came out. And so if you create a user, you're able to vote. And I put like, you can vote up to 5 times. If you want to vote 5 times all at once, or if you want to come back after you've digested the songs and vote a couple times a day, whatever. But very excited to kind of see. I've already seen quite a few votes roll in, but that was one that I didn't get up right away because my brain just wasn't functioning. Mm-hmm. So I apologize that that wasn't up right then on Friday, but it definitely is up now if you guys want to go vote. Is there anything else we need to touch on for today's episode?
No, I think we've gotten everything we could out for this episode. But like I said, we will be analyzing this album for many, many episodes to come.
Yeah. And guys, don't forget to leave us comments in YouTube. I think it was the KJ episode. There's one that doesn't have any comments. And I was like, did I turn comments on? And I just think everyone's overwhelmed. So no hard feelings there. But I appreciate that people were even giving us their time that week, because for me, every habit that I had kind of died screaming, if we're going to be punny about it. And I wouldn't have probably caught up with my favorite podcast on that Friday either, but definitely go back and watch that episode. Leave comments on this one. If you don't subscribe to our YouTube, we are so close to the milestones of being able to monetize and to really start to reinvest back into this. So if you don't subscribe, definitely do. And then as always, the 5 stars on all the different podcast networks are super, super helpful for us to get discovered. And we just appreciate the hell out of you guys. Like, mm-hmm. This has been the craziest week. And for me, the knowing that we have a huge group of listeners that are loyal and that want to hear from us and want to chat, like that pressure was definitely something that was lingering, but I know that Jesse and I showing up and just giving you guys our raw and honest feelings, like you are our friends too. And this is what we're going through. And so I hope that resonates. You know, there's probably a lot of people who are feeling this way, and we're not going to sugarcoat that this has been a very difficult album to digest, and we're not fully kind of through the digestion of it. And so standing with you guys in solidarity, if you're feeling that same way, and we'll kind of keep working through these thoughts and these emotions and developing out a little bit more of a string of thoughts and theories as they kind of come to mind for us.
Yep.
So, well, we'll catch you next week. As always, we've got a few episodes up, and then don't forget to check out the YouTube for the vlog from South Carolina, which I'll have up by this weekend. And as always, we love you guys. Bye.